Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Before we get started with today's program, I wanted to give a big thanks to the hundreds of people who attended our open house yesterday at Wisconsin Public Radio. I had a great time. I think everybody who came had a wonderful time. We really appreciated it. And if you didn't make it, you missed out on a really fun time. I'll tell you that. We've got some fun ahead for you, though, as we visit with Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, William T. Evu Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin IDEA, and Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. So great to have him along as we talk science, science education, and research. Certainly look forward to your questions and comments as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Bassam, great to have you back.
Happy to be here with you, Larry.
You know, science, the American Academy of Arts and Sciences is exploring challenges to scientific literacy in this country, and they're doing it by publishing a series of essays on the topic of scientists, journalists, public relations specialists. What do you think of it?
I think it's a wonderful move on the part of the Academy. I think it's important to connect science and the media.
Yeah.
These connections are important because science and technology are the engines that drive our economy. Science and technology affect us not only personally, but affect us as groups, not only in our country, but around the world. So the connections, establishing good connections between science through the media to the public at large is essential. In fact, Larry, I'm really curious to ask the listening audience to call in and tell us, how do they get their news about science? Where do you get your news about science and technology? Is it from the radio? Is it from TV? Is it from the internet? Is it from newspapers, magazine, what have you? I'm really, really curious how people get reliable information about science and technology nowadays. I also want to say that most of us learn most of what we know outside of school.
Yeah.
School prepares us to learn. School prepares us for jobs. School prepares us for being good citizens in the community. But the learning that we acquire happens mostly outside of school. And so that's why I'm really curious to hear what the audience is going to call in and say. And I also want to make a special commendation to you, Larry, because on your show,
thank you.
On your show, on the Wisconsin Ideas, you cover a wide range of scientific issues. You've got guests like Tricia McConnell, Scott Craven, Phil Pelletieri, the Weather Guys, Jim Lattice, Susan Nitschke, covering areas that relate to nutrition, to climate change, to pets, to astronomy, all over the place. And Wisconsin Public Radio really is the only statewide source of information for reliable information, not only in science, but in all areas. And I really want to salute you for the variety of guests that you have and you continue to have.
Well, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to me, and I was saying this yesterday many times, it's always a great pleasure for me to have a chance to talk with experts like yourself and some of the others you mentioned, all the others you mentioned, frankly, about science. And we have
I'm going to say also Wisconsin Public Radio includes Science Fridays from NPR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then to the best of our knowledge, all the wonderful programs that bring in all kinds of notions and ideas and challenges and good knowledge about science and about technology.
Let's turn to Philip in Sauk City. Philip has a question or comment for us. Philip, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to second to your guest's comments about Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a great source of information. I've been thinking about the issue of water and what it takes to sustain us. I have two questions. The first has to do with, do we know how much water there is on Earth at any particular time, not only in the body of the Earth, but in the atmosphere?
That information is known. I don't happen to have it on the top of my head here, but this is widely known. You know, water is a unique substance. It's the only substance that exists in nature in three phases, in the solid phase, ice, in the liquid phase, and also in the vapor phase. And if you go to my website and click on Chemical of the Week that deals with water, you'll find the information. You'll find the details of the information that you're looking for. My website is scifun.org, www.scifun.org.
Okay. My second question, as the Earth spins around the sun on a yearly basis, is it losing water into the ethers as it's moving around?
I don't think so. No, the water evaporates, goes into the atmosphere, and then we have condensation, you know, what the weather people call precipitation, in the form of rain, in the form of snow. Water is a very, very important part of life as we know it. And
we don't lose it.
We don't lose it, no. We have to be careful about how we keep it clean and usable. So that because water is a good carrier of all kinds of diseases if it's not handled properly, but water is essential to our daily lives, to our health, and we don't lose it.
So the Earth does not leave a vapor trail as it's spinning around the sun.
No. As you go up in the stratosphere, the temperature cools down, and the water then condenses and. It's retained by in the Earth's atmosphere.
There you
go.
The
website reference, you know, like more information that anyone interested in this subject could look for?
Of course. Lots of information. And we want to make sure it's reliable information so there are no misconceptions. And I try on my website, and other people do the same thing too, to provide such information. In addition to my website that I mentioned already, scifun.org, you can go to the U.S. Geological Survey website. You can go to the EPA website. You can go to the Limnology Lab here at UW-Madison, where they study the effect of all kinds of variables on aquatic life. We have a richness of information, and we need to make sure that we use that information properly and carefully.
Absolutely. And while you're there, Philip, you might take a look at Once Upon a Christmas Cherry in the Land of Shaka Shiri. That's up on your website, too, and that's coming up in December. I want to mention that because tickets are always limited.
Tickets are free, and this program is in its 41st year. You've heard me. 41 years we've been doing this. It's in the tradition of the great British scientist Michael Faraday, who used to gather young people and their families around Christmas time at the Royal Institution and do science experiments. And I've been doing it now for 40 years. Number 41 is coming up the first weekend in December. December 4th, Saturday, December 4th, and Sunday, December 5th. Tickets are free and open to the public, but we just announced them very recently, and more than half of them are gone.
Gone already.
And so if you go to the website and click on the 41st annual Christmas lecture, there's a form you can download, fill out, and mail to us. We still have plenty of tickets.
Yeah.
It's a great celebration that we enjoy here. It's really my holiday gift to our community. The program will be videotaped by Wisconsin Public Television and then uplinked to PBS stations, not only in Wisconsin but elsewhere around the country. But come in person. Yeah. We'd love to see you in person. And all members of the family 6 years or older are most welcome to come and attend this very interesting live program that I have had the privilege to present to our community for many, many years, and I hope for a few more years.
I hope so, too. And it's the 4th and 5th, and there are two each day. If I'm not 1 and 4 o'clock, is that
yes,
right?
There are four programs. We do this four times. It's very popular at 1 o'clock and at 4 o'clock. And we ask, this is all explained on the form that you download from the website. We ask that you give us your first choice and second choice because we're not always able to give people their first choice. And please come to our annual Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Lab of Shaka Sheri, December 4th and December 5th.
Or December 5th. And the reason the tickets are free, but we need the tickets because we want to make sure everybody gets a seat.
That's right. We issue the tickets to control the size of the crowd. We don't want people to show up and not be able to get in and have a seat. And as I say, they're free. They're in the true spirit of the Wisconsin idea.
Thanks again, Philip, for calling. I want to give Scott in Sturgeon Bay a chance to join us. Scott, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thanks for taking my call, Larry. I always enjoy your show, and I particularly enjoy Dr. Shaka Sheri. I don't always catch him every month or a couple of months, which I'm not sure of the interval, but I always enjoy him. Dr. Shaka Sheri, I'm a physician, and there's something that you think about the nature of science, I'm sure, more than I do, and I think about it, I think, more than the average person. What do you think about some of the social sciences, like particularly economics? My notion of science is, in the strictest sense, is a discipline in which you study phenomena by isolating one variable and seeing or changing one variable and seeing what that effect has on the system. And therefore determine what the nature of the system is as you study sequentially different variables. I don't think you can do that with economics. I don't think you can have an economic system that is actually a naturally occurring system or even a model. I guess I wonder what you think about that, because we seem to, particularly when it comes to the stock market, which seems to be more of an issue of psychology than any kind of inherent actual economic system. I just am curious about what your thoughts are about that, and I'll take any response you have. And also in the broader sense, some of the social sciences as opposed to the hard sciences, as they might be called. I'll take any response you might have off the air.
All right.
Thank you, Scott, for your kind words and for your comments. And you ask a very good question. The natural sciences, of course, deal with the domain that you have correctly described. And the social sciences deal with our behavior as human beings. And they are different domains. They're very different domains because in one case you can make observations and control the variables and make studies and come up with conclusions and have others validate them, you know, through the peer review system. And in the social sciences, I think they do a remarkable job trying to help us understand how we get along with each other. Perhaps how we should get along with each other. Psychology is one of those sciences, but they're different domains, and it's very hard to control variables in the social sciences. One can make empirical observations about the stock market, can make empirical observations about the economy, and that's what the social scientists do. Among other things, you know, I have a colleague who's an economist, a UW-Madison alum, actually, but an economist at University of California, Berkeley. And what he studies is procrastination. Why do people put off making decisions? And in his case, he's interested in why they put off making decisions about the stock market, you know, selling or buying and so on. And He's a good sport. Every 3, 4, 5 years, I send him an email message and I say, "Dear Matt, I've been wanting to send you this message for some time." But seriously, back to Scott's question, I think we should be encouraging of our colleagues in the social sciences so they can provide very useful knowledge.
You know, as somebody who's in the social sciences, I think the social sciences can play a big role in helping the natural sciences. You take a professor in my department, for example, aside from radio, is life sciences communication. Professor Dietram Scheufele, for example, has studied ways that, in some respects, in terms of nanotechnology, for example, or stem cells, that scientists can better communicate their findings to the public.
I agree with that. And he does a very good job. We have other colleagues on campus who do an equally good job in this regard. And but the laboratory for the natural sciences is different than the laboratory for the social sciences. In fact, the laboratory for the social sciences is more intriguing, and it's more complex, but it's worthy of being supported by us, and we learn from it despite the fact that they are two different domains.
Mary Beth in Delavan, we turn to you. Hi, Mary Beth.
Hi. I have a question about funding for scientific research. And, like, for example, I have a psychology professor who was just really gung-ho about mirror neurons, and he said that it's really cutting-edge stuff, and yet in this country people don't know enough about it, and all the best research, well, like almost all the research is being done overseas because we just don't fund scientific research enough, even at the university level. Is that true?
Well, Mary Beth, the American people continue to be very generous in their support for research and education in the sciences. And whether it's enough or not, that's a different question.
Yeah.
How much is enough? And that's a very difficult question that, that the funding agencies at the federal level, at the state level, in the private sector deal with. At any one time, they check the popular pulse and see what's of interest. For example, I can remember, and many others in the listening audience remember also, the National Institutes of Health would get more money from the Congress than they asked for to deal with issues called the disease of the month, whatever it is that was on the minds of our elected representatives and so on. What we have to do is, those of us in science, in science research, in science education, is really communicate the values that we have and the value of doing research, and do it in a responsible way so that we communicate the consequences of the research that we might encounter and what it is that can happen for the good of the society. Because after all this funding comes from the taxpayers, whether directly through grants, for federal grants or state grants, or indirectly because private foundations, you know, take a tax write-off for making these grants. So, Mary Beth, at any one time, any one particular discipline in science might feel underfunded. But the neurosciences, they're just going like gangbusters. They're really, I mean, we're learning so much now what happens inside the brain and how learning actually happens, how we can influence it. We have researchers in psychology, in the hard sciences, in biological sciences, in vision, in hearing, in gustation, taste, and so on, that really, really are telling us more about their discoveries in these areas. And I'm a strong supporter of making adequate funding available for them.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, our guest here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Speaking today with Bassam Shakashiri, UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry, Larry Mueller here, Jim Packard, our producer, answering the phones today and directing you onto the air. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234 or by emailing us at talk@wpr.org. We'll turn next to John in Madison. John, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, science to me is the future. It's the way we're going to accomplish what we need to accomplish. It's the possibilities for a better world for everybody. So, you know, what Dr. Shakashiri is talking about is absolutely relevant. I have degrees in three different sciences, and I couldn't keep up at all with any of them. I would have been lost decades ago if I didn't read constantly. I read the Scientific America, Science News. I read the pullout from the New York, the science pullout every Tuesday from the New York Times, and I'm still hopelessly behind in everything. I feel totally ignorant all the time. But what I called in about was the relationship between the media and science. I find one, they slight science. They put out stuff like people wearing that use hula hoops for 2 hours a day have a decreased incidence, say, of breast cancer in women aged 30 to 35. They'll put out nonsense like this. You know, so somebody will come up with one of these studies that needs to be replicated over and over again, but they'll pick out the most trivial thing. Or They'll present something like Avandia has got some harmful side effects, but they won't go into it. They won't pursue it. Or we have global warming, which is next to nuclear annihilation, the biggest thing facing the entire planet. And they play that down. I am frustrated beyond belief at the ways the media, due to its corporate structure and its corporate advertising, portray scientists as oddballs, nuts, and you can't, you know, they don't stress the fact that our whole society and our whole future is based on science. And that's really why I was calling in.
All right. A comment?
Thank you, John, for your comments and for your observations. It is true. The more we learn, the more we learn how much we don't know. It's very true. As we advance knowledge, we realize how little we know compared to what is there to be known. So that's the nature of research, and that's the nature of our reaction to research. Yes, science and the media are two different cultures. The practice of science is different than the practice in the media. The purpose of newspapers is, of course, to sell newspapers or magazines, what have you, whatever it is that is being used. And those are good uses. I'm not saying they're not, but I believe very strongly in the responsibility for communicating science to having that responsibility reside with the practitioners of science. Now, it doesn't mean every scientist has to stop doing their research so they can communicate their research to others, but it does mean that in a 3 to 5 year period, we should be taking time to explain our research in words that are understandable to others in our community, beyond going very, very technical. I think that would go a long way to help bridge the gap between the science culture and the media culture. In fact, I'd like to say, Larry, one of the programs of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy is to encourage graduate students completing their PhD theses to include a chapter in their thesis explaining their research to their family, to elected officials, to newspaper reporters, to friends, to their immediate neighbors, using language that is, of course, accurate technically, but sure, but not use jargon. And we provide a cash award for every PhD graduate student in chemistry who does this of $500. The student gets it. This is an attempt on the part of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy to really address the issues that John is calling about in a positive way.
Yeah.
In a very highly positive way. And we hope that this will influence not only the students, but their thesis advisors, because, you know, what goes in the thesis has to be approved by the thesis advisor and the review committee and so on. And I'm happy to report that this is working out quite well. We just announced it last spring, and it's moving along very well. And this is for those of you who are supporters of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. This is one way, one positive way through which we are using your support. So thank you.
Thanks very much for that. And I think just as we just had a little computer issue here, we'll get that straightened out in a minute and we'll have our callers back. But to go along with that, sometimes the journalistic practices, as journalists are taught to get all sides of an issue, and sometimes I think there's some question about the fairness of coverage on issues. There could be times when 99% of the research or whatever shows one thing, and reporters will report on that, but then they will also go and get the 1% a comment from that side, and that makes it seem as though, you know, it's a 50-50 split instead of a 99-1 split.
Well, this is why we need good science writers. We need good science writers like Deborah Blum, mm-hmm. Like Ron Seeley.
Yeah.
Like Casey Cole with the LA Times. They're reporters in the Tuesday science section of the New York Times. They're reporters from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who really did a very good job with bisphenol. And it's very essential that writing of science be encouraged. And now I'm disappointed in this regard, Larry, to tell you and the listening audience that many newspapers are laying off science writers.
Yeah.
Washington Post, for example, had an excellent cadre of science writers are being laid off because the circulation is low. CNN has dropped all its science reporters. So we need to think about that. But the sense of fairness, you know, science is not democratic, Larry. The findings are what they are. And it's important that we as scientists learn how to communicate our results in an understandable way, but also in a fair way to the people in our environment, the people in our community, the people who support us, the people who are likely to benefit from our findings, the people who should be alerted about our findings in case they deal with issues that relate to safety or public health. So you're right. Take the issue of climate change. This is a highly politicized issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all right with me because in a democracy, and I really believe in the democratic principles that this country was founded on and we continue to benefit from. I think we should have open debate about climate change so that we can understand the basis of the science behind climate change. What are the greenhouse gases? What are the effects that they have? How much can we control what happens in terms of emission of greenhouse gases? By the way, Larry, greenhouse gases are good for us. Mm-hmm. Greenhouse gases, if it weren't for greenhouse gases, the Earth as we live on it would not be. It will be very cold. Greenhouse gases trap heat. But too much of one of the greenhouse gases, carbon dioxide specifically, has serious consequences to our health, to our economy, to our well-being. So these kinds of conversations should take place, must take place, openly and with respect. Openly and with respect of the other person. Not necessarily respect the other person's viewpoint. I mean, that's what we're talking about, having an adequate, respectful debate. But we need to air all these issues as you successfully do on Wisconsin Public Radio.
We have more callers online. Mary in Richland Center up next. Mary, hi. Thank you for calling.
Yes, thank you for the wonderful program, as usual, provocative and inspiring. Doctor, two questions. When the Earth was created, doesn't matter what anyone believes, divine power, Big Bang, there was a certain amount of land mass, a certain amount of water or liquid. Is that still in the same ratio today as it was billions of years ago?
The elements are in the same ratio, but how they combine with each other and how they affect us changes. For example, a very long time ago, a very, very, very long time ago, there was no oxygen gas in the air, but now life depends on having almost 20% of the air that we breathe be oxygen. So there are different combinations of the elements. The elements were formed when the Earth was formed, and the transformations between the different elements that give us different substances continues to happen. Take for example the burning of fossil fuels. So the oil is formed. The petroleum is in inside the Earth. We get it out. We distill it. We separate it into its different components. We use it for a lot of highly useful products, and then we burn it, and it produces more carbon dioxide. Well, carbon dioxide gas then is used in photosynthesis by the plants. Combined with water vapor, with the help of sunlight to give us some sugars in the plants, mm-hmm. and so on. But we're producing more carbon dioxide gas because of the wonderful results of the Industrial Revolution. The Industrial Revolution has had a huge impact on our progress, but there are adverse consequences to continually using fossil fuels. Not only economically, but also for the benefit of the health of our environment.
Mm. Wow. Well, I wish you'd do a whole program on that. That's just incredible knowledge that you have. The second question, do you think that science and religion will eventually agree?
I think science and religion are very compatible. One of the programs of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy deals specifically with that, deals with science, religion, and ethics. We've had conversations led by people on Judaism and science, on Islam and science, on Christianity and science. I think personal beliefs are very, very important to each of us. I think we have to be respectful of other people. I'm not saying we necessarily agree with the views of different people, including my own views, but we're respectful of each other as human beings. I think the two strongest forces in society today across the world, all over the world, are science and religion. And Mary, we have to work harder to make science and religion serve us well and to help us really sustain the quality of life that we have here on this planet. We are all so fortunate to be on this planet and to have the unbelievable opportunities to learn more and to support each other and to support our existence. So I'm a firm believer in the intersection between religion and science. I think we need to have openness in the dialogue, and we need to have respect of people's beliefs.
And thank you very much for calling, Mary. Appreciate your call very much. We have a couple of emails from people. You know, you asked where do people get their information about science, and a couple of emails came in, one from Terry who says, I get the majority of my information about science from Wisconsin Public Radio, NPR, and Wisconsin Public Television. They offer me the opportunity to learn more by having many authors as guests, and I can explore a subject in depth by reading their books. Karen in Madison says, where I get my information, radio, books, internet, conferences, expos, newspapers, as long as they're with us. By trade, I'm a musician, teacher, graphic artist, but I see the urgency of science literacy improvement for all ages and sectors of the population. So,
wonderful responses. Thank you both for sending the email messages. And, of course, in science, we want to have conversation. We want to have dialogue. So listening to the radio is a very good thing. Watching TV is a good thing, too. Reading newspapers is a good thing, magazines and so on. But having conversations, discussions with others, you know, going to a science museum, going to a science center, going to a nature center. Science is all around us, and the more we talk about it, the more we engage ourselves in conversation that deal with it, the better appreciation we have of it. And, you know, having said all that, let me just say one more thing. As human beings, we have a whole slew of problems, and science is not the answer to all the problems that we have. But science and technology are what make us who we are today because of the great advances that have happened in both areas of science and in technology. But these great advances are at high risk of stopping because, again, the public needs to understand why things are the way they are. And scientists need to engage the public in conversations about science. And you know, it's often said in scientific circles that we need to advance the public understanding of science, and I'm for that. But I also say that we need to, ourselves as scientists, understand the public because it isn't one public.
Yeah.
There are whole different parts of the public.
Thousands.
So science and the media are, I think, two cultures that need to be connected to each other and have to be done in responsible ways.
Ronald in Elm Grove, it's your turn. Hi, Ronald.
Yes, good morning. I've been listening to your program and finding that some of the previous callers and certainly the comments of your guest has certainly answered my concern in many ways. You have something about the Wisconsin literacy, science literacy thing. And my concern was whether our legislators, congressmen, and senators were getting enough science education. There are certainly some prime examples of non-believers in the Senate, and I'm concerned sometimes about how they are going to get educated to respond more fully and usefully to some of these concerns that the rest of us have.
Well, thank you, Ronald. And I think we all live in a society where we interact with each other, and we get periodic reminders about the importance of educating ourselves and educating our elected representatives, whether it's the result of an election or the result of a piece of legislation that has been passed. I think we have to be active. We have to be vigilant. And as I keep saying, Larry and Ronald, we have to be respectful of each other so that we can together work to advance our society.
And thank you, Ron. And Claire in Menominee Falls, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think this is such an important topic for everyone to discuss. I look back at my son, who is now 23 and a MD-PhD student at the Medical College of Wisconsin, a participant in the medical scientist training program under Dr. Barbieri's direction, NIH funded, which without that, it would have been extremely difficult for his mother, father, and him to participate. I think some of the thanks goes to his father and myself having opportunities to provide him with trips to the museums and such, but also his science teachers, the Jason Project Junior High, the SMART team with Mr. Klistinski at Marquette University High School, work in research labs during his undergrad studies at Madison, Dr. Kuo and other researchers. All this, I think, has helped bring him to where he is today, a first-year medical student, not having to worry about $250,000 in tuition, so that when he's through with his studies, years from now, he doesn't have to worry about paying back the loan, but he can get right into research, which is his love.
Thank you, Claire, for this testimony. And your son is fortunate. As I said earlier in this program, the American people have been very generous in supporting science research, science education, and technology. And Claire, if I may say this, your son has a big responsibility when he finishes with his medical training, not only to be a good physician, but to also share with the rest of the community the value of the experiences that he's had, and to help educate the public at large about the medical sciences and developing an attitude, a healthy attitude toward learning in general. Just as Scott, who is a physician, called much earlier about this, has said. So congratulations, and I best wishes to you and to your son.
And I wanted to mention once again that your special Christmas gift or holiday gift to the people of Wisconsin, Once Upon a Christmas Cheery in the Lab of Shaka Sherry. And Bassam, what do you give people just a minute here of what you do in that lab?
Oh, we have a lot of fun with special guests. We are lucky to have Santa Claus come by. Bucky Badger is a regular guest. He's been there for 40 years. I hope he shows up for the 41st year. And the 41st one, we make a connection with element number 41, which is niobium.
Oh.
So we have very colorful experiments that relate to niobium. And we have a couple of other surprises that I want to keep quiet for now. So.
Okay. Well, if you want a ticket, the tickets are free, but you need to get a ticket so that you have a spot when you get there. It's Saturday and Sunday, December 4th and 5th, and two shows each day, one at 1, and then the second one is at 4 o'clock on Saturday, and then one and again at 4 on Sunday. Go to www.scifun, that's S-C-I-F-U-N, scifun.org, and you can download the ticket information and go from there.
And we have more tickets left for the Sunday programs than we do for Saturday. Saturday is almost filled, but send in the request. We'll try to accommodate you.
All right. Thank you, Bassam.
Thank you, Larry.
Bassam Shakashiri,
UW-Madison Professor of Chemistry and William T. Evue Distinguished Chair for the Wisconsin Idea. And he's also, as he was talking about, Director of the Wisconsin Initiative for Science Literacy. Great to have him with us. And I can tell you, he will be back and we will have him on again for sure. Coming up, we have Red Green. Red Green from Possum Lake, Ontario, is the author of a new book, and the book is modestly titled, How to Do Everything by the Man Who Should Know. It's published by Doubleday Canada Hardcover. His show is the longest-running Canadian television series in the United States. And he'll be bringing his wit and wisdom and talk about his new book next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.